She was fire and light and ash and embers. She was Aelin Fireheart, and she bowed for no one and nothing, save the crown that was hers by blood and survival and triumph.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast that brings you reviews and updates on Book Talk's most popular books and tells you whether you should fit them into your busy young professional schedule. I'm Catherine.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Casey. Today we are doing book 4 in the Throne of Glass series, Queen of Shadows. So we are returning to the SJM universe and we are meeting our girl, Aelin. I feel like I can finally say that at this point. It's not a spoiler. And this next book is a thick one. I mean, she is no joke. So much stuff happens, but the journey basically picks up where the book before leaves off. So Aelin is returning to Adarlin to tie up loose ends, win back her kingdom. And she's left dear sweet Rowan behind. A lot of stuff happens. She reconnects with the resistance. She reconnects with Kael, who had fled the castle. And Dorian is being controlled by the Vog through the collar that his father put on him. And we also return to the witches and Manon and their story as everything sort of converges together. In this book, a lot of paths finally cross and it all goes crazy.
And not only do all the paths finally cross with the 1 million characters you've already met, there's way more characters you meet.
But lots of good ones.
Oh, yeah.
The best ones.
Yeah. Some endings and some fresh beginnings. So, do you guys have your reviews?
Yes, I do. So, I will go first. I, of course, have a 5-star review from Goodreads because it's SJM. And it's from Jessica, and it says, reading this book feels like an ascension to some higher sphere. There's more, but I figured that's all you need.
Yeah.
I have 2 in KC fashion, and one of them is specifically for KC.
Yeah.
But first, a 4-star review. Need more evidence that this book and book 1 were actually written by the same person.
Yeah.
Yes.
But the 5-star, that one's for Casey. Okay, but Kael can jump off the nearest mountain now.
Yes. Yeah, literally. Bro, this entire book, I was like, and ladies, let's all say it together. Fuck Kael.
Like,
like, I'm like orchestrating a chorus in my mind of just like, fuck Kael.
Because he got worse.
He did.
He got dumber. That's,
he does have, so I will say this. He does have a character arc that I respect finally in this book, but it does not make me forgive him.
He's no longer like just there.
Yeah, that's a good way to
put it. He actually affects the plot now.
Yeah. Yes. But the first half of the book, he affects it in ways that you don't like or appreciate.
Right.
But luckily, it's a long book. Okay. I once again have 3.
God.
I have 2 negative ones and a positive one. So my first is a 3-star. It says, Queen of Loosed Breath Shadows by Sarah J. Silver in His Eyes Moss. I was like, all right, low key true. You got her there.
Not wrong.
Not wrong, but damn.
This one is the one that's really heinous. Also 3 stars. This was honestly so much better than the mess that was the prequels, but it still sucks.
Oh, are we calling them prequels?
Yeah, apparently in this review.
Yikes.
And then she goes on a little bit more. And the last paragraph is also plot. What plot? All they do is growl and groan and purr. I mean, are they cats? Cats are the only thing that freaking purr.
One of them is a cat. So
one of them literally is, yeah.
Actually, like 2 of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I was like, this book does have hella's plot. So I
don't
know
the
what
most
book you read.
Plot-filled book of all of them.
Yeah.
It's too much plot. At some points, you're like, whoa, hold
yeah.
on.
You're like, stop scheming for a minute. I'm getting lost. Mercy.
I think that is general consensus, though, is that leading up to this, the books are just like kind of dull. And then right here is where people like, this is why I read the series and reread the series and reread the series is for Queen of Shadows. So,
yeah.
Hold on. Oh, my sister texted me this week and she's still on Air of Fire. And she was like, Air of Fire finally caught my attention, so I'll be reading. I was like, okay.
What a little
anyway. Most people, like I said, this is the book that's really like gets them into the series. Mm-hmm. Overall Goodreads rating 4.6 out of 5. Overall Amazon rating 4.8 out of 5.
Yeah.
Do you guys agree?
I have one more review.
Oh.
I thought you read 3 already.
No. This is my last one. This one I'm reading for me.
I swear you already read 3.
No, I read 2. I just talk a lot. this is my favorite one. 4-star review. Rip Kaolina. LOL. Rowalin for life. I had at least 10 heart attacks. This book was so intense. Loved it.
Nice.
Yeah. I love that because I'm also like, Rowalin for life.
Oh, yeah.
This was a Goodreads Choice Award winner in 2015. Like, this book is a beast. But if you've made it into the series at all, this is like so worth it.
Yeah. And I normally don't excuse series that take 2 whole books of boring to get
3.
To. Okay. I like the third book.
I like the third book.
I
liked the first and second, but
I mean, I think the first and second were good, but I normally wouldn't excuse a book that takes so long to get this good, but I'll excuse it this time. It's worth it.
It's SJM and she's very good at what she does.
Yeah.
She's worth it.
She's worth it. But yeah, I guess we say our star ratings. And I mean, if it's obvious, I'm a 5.
I am also a 5.
2021, Caitlin gave it 4 stars. I don't know.
How?
That doesn't mean Caitlin's I like wrong. Disliked it. Like, I definitely liked it.
You've given some other things 5 stars that are questionable. Come on.
I'm pretty sure I gave the first one 5. And then after that, I was just kind of like 4, 4, 4. And I don't know what's next. But I was still a baby in the SJM universe.
Shame.
I didn't know to appreciate what was before me because there wasn't much better out there.
And Casey, how I know you're a 5-star review is because your review on Goodreads. And it's amazing. So I'm going to read it out here for the public to know. Casey says, this is the perfect novel. My only complaint is that now I have to wake up in my bed every morning knowing I would sell my soul to have a fictional fae man in it.
Yeah. Yeah. I said what I said.
You know, I am a Reese girly, but sometimes I then think about how just like truly relational Rowan is. I'm like, I may have to switch eventually.
I think Rowan is the best partner.
Yes.
I agree with that.
Partner.
Mm-hmm.
I think Reese is the best lover.
Well, that's because this is young adult. This is young adult. You can't have the best lover in
I know,
a young
that's
adult.
That's what I'm
series.
Saying.
I'm publishing that on our Instagram. Like,
yeah, that's the quote.
I said what I said.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, there is so much, like, as an adult reading this book, there is so much, like, sexual, like, frustration because they never, you know, in the adult books they can go anywhere they want to go, but in this book it's like fade to black and I'm like, why did you just tease me for 500 pages?
Yeah, but you don't mind it because it's so good.
But it's just so damn good. Oh my gosh.
Okay, well, we've been talking about the characters that we love, but Is the book more plot or character driven?
Plot in this one, I think plot.
Yeah, at this point, we have set up the characters so well that from here on out, it's plot.
And let me tell you, Aelin arrived ready to fuck some shit up. She had her shit in order.
She left as Selena, came back as Aelin, and is ready to burn shit down.
Yeah.
Now, I would say, if you're separating out the storylines, this one is the one where Manon is really character development. Like,
yes,
you get her story is very much more character driven than plot driven. She's just kind of.
No, I agree with that. And I love it.
She's catching up.
Yeah. There are so many characters in this book that are like my favorite character. Like Aelin's my favorite character. Rowan's my favorite character. Manon's my favorite character.
When I said in the last one, like, I didn't really love the witches in Airfire. Mm-hmm. I was like, why are they here? And this is the book where I was like, okay, mm-hmm. I like this. And I saw several reviews that were the same, like, oh, I like the witches now. Yeah, me too.
I was ready. I'd be knowing. I was like, once you choose a dragon that sniffs flowers, your character arc is about to be one for the ages. I am calling it. Okay, skipping have you read other books by the author? And actually, I do want to ask you guys, I'm really curious about your answer. Where do you put this book in your like entire SJM universe ranking?
Ugh,
it's been so long since I've read them in ACOTAR.
I need someone who's read this book recently because. I think like my top books before this were Mist and Fury and Silver Flame. And I think this book tied them. Like, I loved it that much.
That's really good.
It's definitely top five, if not like top four.
Yeah, it's definitely up there for me.
I will say
now Crescent City 3 is about to come onto the scene, so we'll see.
I will say, I don't even know if it's my favorite Throne of Glass book.
Okay.
No.
No?
No, like, yeah, you're right. But mine might be the next one, not the last one.
Oh my gosh. I'm so shocked. Empire of
Storms. Yeah.
How can it get better than this?
It's really close.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so much good things ahead for you, sweet Casey.
I can't wait to reach the final penultimate level of this cult.
Obviously, we talk about all these questions all the time, our intro questions with SJM, but I do want to at least touch on pacing because the books are getting fatter.
It's such a quickly paced book.
There is always something happening. Like, I was never bored. I will say, I thought the beginning where it's mostly... Actually, I forgot. I can't say that because there's a spoiler section. But there's, like, a part, like, 200 pages in where a character arrives. And I feel like it kind of changes the book, the book's pacing. And I think after that character arrives, I like the pacing better. But in general, the pacing is good.
There's like 20 plots happening, so it's really hard to put down.
Yeah.
Also, sometimes you gotta put it down because your head hurts.
And there's a lot of plots where they're introduced and then weaved throughout the book so that you're never bored. Yeah. Like, this book switches character perspectives a lot. Which, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know that we've grown a little bit skeptical of. But every single time that changed character perspectives, I was like, fuck, I want to read more about that storyline. Mm-hmm. And then by the time I finished the different perspective and it changed again, I was like, fuck, no, I want to read more about that storyline. Like, I never wanted to change.
And it brings back characters that were in the first book or just barely mentioned in the first book. Like, all the things.
Yeah, I mean, she did character perspective flips
before they were popular.
Mm-hmm.
So I give her a lot of grace on that one. Now people have overdone it, but she did it first.
Well, and she did it best. I can't read other stuff.
Facts. Okay. Do we need to say, would you watch a movie or TV show of this book?
No. We need just like a Game of Thrones-esque Throne of Glass series. Just all of it.
This particular book could be like 3 or 4 movies. Like, just this book alone could be a whole, like, season in a series.
And there's like a very interesting like explosion that takes place. I'm like, this is Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
If you've watched that and read the books, you'll be like, just think about it.
Yeah.
Yes. It is. The dots are connecting.
I was like, whoa. So the visuals, they're ready. They're there. They're waiting. Let's produce it.
Yeah. All right. Busy girl rating.
I mean, I'm going to give it a 5 because honestly, I know it's long. I know it's thick. But I think it's just such a well-paced read that you can put it down and pick it back up and still be interested. And it didn't take that long to read, honestly.
I'm going to give it a 4. And probably the rest of the series a 4 at this point, just because they get longer and longer. And they're harder to just sit down and binge unless you have a good chunk of time set aside. This is coming from someone who read The Second Crescent City in like 15 hours straight. But I just think, I mean, if you've made it this far, obviously you're going to keep reading and you're only going to gain momentum at this point. But like, it is still super stinking long. And you're not carrying it around with you.
Oh, no. I am going to second that. I'm going to give it a 4. The reason I say that is because I had finished the third book a while ago, and I really liked it. I really did want to carry on with the series, but the length was really daunting for me. And I knew I was going to, like, it was just, like, hard to fit into my schedule. Especially with all my other books that I'm reading. And it did still take me, I think, a week to read it. 5 days to a week. And so it is easy to pick up and put down. And I really, really loved it. But I think I'm going to give it a Busy Girl 4.
Don't kill us, Catherine.
No, I won't kill you. I get it.
We can't all be speedy like you.
Yeah, I'm not saying I'm giving every Sarah J. Maas a 5, but like this specific book is a 5 for me. There are others in the series that are not a 5.
Yeah. The first two books.
And the next in book 6, I think it is, not a 5. Spoiling myself there, but
yeah. So, okay. Now we get to dive into the rest of this chonky novel. This is our spoiler alert, so if you haven't already read the book, pause here, go read it. There are so many fun schemes and surprises and subplots in this book that you should not spoil it for yourself, and come back to us when you've read 4 damn books.
I think that should be our like slogan.
Oh my god, yes.
Come back to us when you've read more damn books.
From now on, we should do that.
I love it.
Anyway, we've already mentioned this, but Aelin is back in Rifthold, the city in Adarlan, and she's tying up some loose ends. And we've already mentioned Kale being a complete and utter asshole during this book. So my question to y'all is, what did you think of the reunion between the two of them? And was Kale justified in his reaction and thoughts about Aelin?
No, he was not justified. He made me so furious in the first half of this book. Like, I actually think it's some of the most angry I've ever been at a character because it felt so unjustified to me. Because I think he really, like, he was heartbroken and I think a little threatened. And so he went out of his way to think the worst of her. And I just felt like he was very self-centered and, like, interpreted everything only from his own perspective and couldn't make room for Aelin to grieve. Like, he acted like Dorian was only special to him, as if him and Aelin didn't also have a relationship. And he just expected her, I think, to, like, be perfect. The way he reacted to her magic was, like, very bigoted. And the thoughts he was having about her being, like, dangerous to their country were, like, really unjustified. I was pissed.
I'm like, okay, I understand some of the complexities of this reunion. And then he's like, you're not my queen. I'm like, okay, never mind. I have no room for you. Boy is too loyal to his country, doesn't understand the resource in front of him. And I mean, I feel like it's fair for not everyone to welcome her back with open arms. They can be skeptical, but it's just, like, super annoying.
Yeah. It's the reason it was so annoying is because it's super hypocritical, because he spent his whole life serving, like, the most evil man in their world, but wants to be critical of her. I was like, no.
Yeah. And that becomes a theme throughout this book of people criticizing her actions based on appearances or based on how she goes about certain ways of doing things, not realizing, like, hey, her parents were murdered in front of her when she was 10. She was then trained to be an assassin by the Assassin's Guild in Erebin, and then was put into slavery for 2 years in a salt mine. What did you expect her to turn out to be? She's not going to be all sunshine and daisies and prim and proper queen. No, she's going to be a fire-breathing bitch queen because she's gone through so much hell. And I thought it was really interesting because, yes, Casey, I agree. This was the most angry I've ever been at an SJM character because we got his point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to see his internal thoughts, and his internal thoughts were equally as just deficient as just his actions, because he was just like, oh, she's gonna destroy the world, all magic is bad, she must be a monster. And it's like, don't you have critical thinking skills instead of thinking with your dick? Like, mm-hmm. Think critically here. Not all people with magic are monsters. Have you ever thought that people without magic can actually be monsters, like, you know, the king that you served for many years? And, like, he's part of this resistance but almost hates the resistance itself. And so it's very interesting to see him interacting with Aelin, who's kind of like the figurehead of the resistance, despite, like, not them not knowing that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's why I got so angry, is because you're listening to his inner thoughts and he's just so like, I'm not going to tell her how to unlock magic. She doesn't understand me and Dorian. She's just trying to kill him. Like, and then also how he treated Nesrin, his former, like, fuck buddy, former yeah, romantic relationship.
A friend with a benefit.
Yeah. And she's, like, pointing out, like, actual valid points. And he's just like, no, you don't understand. And she's like, nah, I understand perfectly.
Yeah. No.
Better things are coming for you, baby girl.
Yeah. yeah, I mean, I agree. The point. So another thing that bothered me a lot was he treated her like she was really disgusting for being an assassin. And it really bothered me that he acted like she had a choice. And B, it was again like, okay, so when Aelin kills people for survival, it's inherently bad. But when you kill people, it's inherently good. Like, Kale at that point had become a member of the resistance who is fighting people and killing people. And I was like, okay, so you served the king willfully for years, and now you're in the resistance, and now you're finally killing people and getting your hands dirty. You don't think that you're responsible for, like, the fallout the same way she is? It just bugged me to no end. And he eventually realized he was being a little bitch. So, oh, also the fact that he was willing to love Dorian with magic, but still saw her as a monster for having magic. Oh my gosh.
Well, and Dorian at this point in time is literally a monster.
Yeah.
Quite literally has a Vlog demon infecting his brain. Like, there's almost no hope for him at this point. And he's still like, oh, but he's the good guy and you're the bad guy. And yeah. Aelin calls him out on his bullshit of like, yeah, so you're okay with Dorian having magic, but you're not okay with me having magic.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't like Rowan because Rowan's a masculine threat. And it's like, but we all like Rowan, so.
Also, Rowan is like objectively better. Like, Kael can maybe get there and like be a man one day, but this whole book is like him. I would almost say it's a coming of age for him because he kind of like snaps out of it. And yeah. It's like, you're a little bitch boy in this novel. And Rowan is this like sexy warrior man. Like, ugh, no competition.
I think for both him and Dorian, it's kind of coming of age. They're finally forced to stand on their own 2 feet.
Yeah. One book behind eight. Just as it normally happens.
Yeah. Well, another man we love, Adian. Mm-hmm. We love crazy cousin Adian. And he has been captured and is going to be executed, which we are all pretty obviously aware that it's a plot to get Aelin to show up at the castle so they can kill her. But we still got to rescue our homeboy. What did you think of all this?
I was super nervous. I feel like I get very anxious on behalf of characters that I like. And so I was really scared. To be honest, I was really scared that Aelin was going to get Adian out, but then someone else was going to be captured and it was going to be just as bad. But I loved the plot. I love the plotting. One of the reasons I love this book so much, and I think it is like, I just praise it so much in my mind, is that we really get to see Aelin plot in this novel. Like, she is constructing plans. She is hiding details. She is giving everybody half the story in the exact right way. And this is like one of the first like really great examples of her just having a really good plot.
It's almost like she grew up as a trained assassin / royal with Fae blood. Weird.
Yeah. And we finally get to see it in action.
Yeah. And for the first 3 books, she was like going from like traumatized young girl to like a full-blooded woman in this book. Like, she's a true mastermind in this book. And from here on out, she is a woman.
Thanks to Rowan.
Yes. And funnily enough, who says that multiple times is actually Kael. And he says, when Aelin left, she was this like scrappy cutthroat and she returned a queen. Like, she holds herself like a queen. And he notices in her conduct, and that's how it feels, is she's fully come into herself as a ruler.
Well, because she was allowed to access her fae side. And so she was actually comfortable in her own body. So even though her fae side is suppressed in a Darlin, you can still notice the physical differences of her being able to access it for the first time in 8 years.
Yeah.
Well, and probably just like the mental relief too of being able to like be your true self.
Mm-hmm.
It's gotta probably account for a lot of how she now holds herself. I want to bring up, we get a new lady who you think is gonna kind of be just like there, but ends up being a very present character, and that is Lysandra. And she used to be Aelin's enemy, but like sort of ends up siding with her, being an accomplice and all of this, and she kind of becomes one of the gang. What do y'all think of our friend Lysandra? Lysandra?
I think it's Lysandra.
I was saying Lysandra, but I don't know.
I don't know either. Do we ever know? Not in this series.
We don't ever know. I loved her. I loved the twist that she ends up being a shapeshifter. I thought that was really cool. And I love that she ends up choosing to be like that, like snow leopard, whatever that animal is called. And I thought it was a really nice, like, throw to like finally get like another like powerful woman in the book. Because we know that like Aelin has really been missing Nehemia from the first book. And so I was also really glad that like she kind of had an ally against Aerobin, because she had been really alone in that fight, and like the trauma and like the really complicated bond they have was really hard for Aelin to like manage and get over. And so I thought it was a great plot device to have someone there to help her.
It's also just one more person you're afraid for now, though.
Yeah. It is the whole time.
She does get captured and you're like, but we just met.
No, she can't die.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. This is one of my, like, Lysandra is one of my favorite SJM characters. I love her so much.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but I mean, I like her.
I just think she is a badass. Like, she is a woman who worked for everything she got and worked her way up, like, from the bottom to here. And yeah, she had to do some pretty terrible things, and she was forced into sex slavery and forced to be Aerobin's kind of mistress. But even though her and Aelin, the reason why they were enemies, like, she actually did hate Aelin, is because she resented the attention she got. She resented all of the praise. And it's because this man, Aerobin, and the society in general was pitting them against each other in order to for them to not realize their true power. So they,
and they're both badass, like, fae women that don't know each other are badass. I guess Lysandra, is she technically fae? I don't know.
Shapes it, shifter, but yeah.
Anyway, they're both secretly powerful and can't do anything about it, but don't know each other secretly powerful. So, like, they're rivals when they could just be working together for the same end and they don't know it.
But I think it just puts a mirror on society pitting women against each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a great message that I particularly love to see in YA novels, because I think, like, young girls are, like, particularly influenced by that idea that other women are competition. And in this book, like, they really show you how Aelin and Lysandra being pitted against each other gave Aerobin all the power. And when they decided to work together instead, they had the power and were able to, like, take control.
There is something about a sex worker using their position to slit some throats that just gets me really amped up.
The trope that I just never stop loving.
Yeah, like, I will forever love that.
Vengeance.
Yeah. Another thing deserved that I feel like happens in, oh my God, I just forgot the name. What the hell is happening to my brain? That series you just mentioned earlier, Caitlin. The TV series that's also a book series.
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones. I kept getting the word throne popping into my head, and I kept being like, Throne of Glass. And I was like, no, that's what we're talking about now. And it'd be like, Throne of Glass, Throne of Glass. Anyway. That's something that happens a lot in that series too, where like a prostitute or sort of a taken advantage of woman slits the throat of her, like the people who think they have control over her. And I'm like, always like, not that that series is like feminism incarnate, but I'm always like, yes, yes, yes.
Get your comeuppance.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that she helped rescue Adian.
Yes. A fighter for justice.
Yeah, she's just kind of there, and then all of a sudden she's like very passionately there, and you're like, I don't know what happened, but I like it.
Yeah.
And I love that she's helping a little girl escape.
That's what really makes you like her.
It is. Okay, so this is the part I referenced earlier where the character arrives and things are different now, and that character is Rowan. He shows up.
See, I thought you were gonna say when Lorcan arrived. Okay.
No, I don't give a shit about
that's where. No, but you were talking about like stuff really picks up, and I guess Rowan arrives because Lorcan arrives, so I guess it's the same thing. But
yeah, so the pickup happens. I loved it so much that he arrived, because I think you can feel how much tension it takes out of Aelin. Like, She's dealing with everything herself, and now she has her partner who she can really trust, like who gets her, who sees her as an equal, and like who she knows she can trust, like work together on this with her.
Well, and really the only person who knows the real her.
Yeah, and the full backstory to like everything she knows and why she's there and what she's trying to do. So it like totally like was like a little like 90 degree turn in the book for me, and I like really loved that he was there. The blood oath, it does still bother me that Rowan took the blood oath to her. I think there was no need for that, but
and that's where in this book you kind of figure out it's solely to complicate things with her and Adian's reunion is like the entire plot point of him taking the blood oath.
Yep.
Well, and I think I don't love that, like, immediately after he exits a blood oath, he enters another blood oath. But I loved that we got Adian's point of view of them reuniting. It wasn't necessarily Aelin's point of view, but it's Adian being like, I smell something familiar. And it's because he smelled his scent, Rowan's scent, on Aelin.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew immediately as soon as she ran up to him and hugged him that it was Rowan. That's what he told Nesrin. And
but then
so,
you also get Adian's daddy, his Rowan's buddy, and that's all mixed in there too.
Bravio.
Yeah, I was like, what?
Yeah, that comes out of left
daddy
field.
Issues.
Right. Well, they kind of make sense because Adian is so fey that it can't, right. He can't just be a demi-fey. Like, he has to be like a full half-blood.
Right. Yes.
But yeah, I can understand now that the blood oath was to complicate things with Adian, but I'm glad they actually talked it out and that Rowan was like, hey, I understand you're angry, but you don't take it out on her. And like Aelin was like, if you want to take the blood oath, you can. I understand this was important to you, but I'm not going to force anything on you. Like, it's going to be a different kind of ruling, which I kind of like that theme of like, we're not going to go with tradition. We're going to choose our own path.
Well, she's very much like, I did what I did for a reason, and you can like it or not. And how often do you see that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just
we're not trying to people please.
Yeah, preach. I did. It made me honestly laugh, though, because when her and Adian are in the kitchen and they're kind of reconciling, and, you know, he's been really angry. And she kind of says that. She's like, look, like, you can take the blood oath. Like, we don't, you know, kind of what you guys said. Like, we can make our own rules now. And, like, I know you're loyal to me. We still have this bond. And it's just, like, was so chill for them to be discussing, like, a lifelong, magically bound oath that literally makes him her servant forever. And they were just like, look, you can take it if you want to. Like, if it's really that important to you, then just.
But he'd also been bred to take it since birth. And it is his blood, his cousin. So I feel like it's less weird just because it's a lifelong expectation he's had.
Mm-hmm. And I get that.
But obviously weird to us who that's not
weird.
A concept.
It's weird, but it's also like Aelin. The reason why it's not like problematic as much is because it's Aelin who he's taking it to. And Aelin, you can make conditions at the blood oath to where it's not you're in servitude or slave. And that's kind of what she did with Rowan, where it's just like, how about we listen to each other and just loyalty to me? That's the only thing she asked for was loyalty. And so she doesn't have to ask for servitude or slavery or anything like that. She can just ask, like, stay loyal to Taryn. So I think that's what makes it okay, is because she's willing to say, like, you don't have to take it if you don't want to. I'm giving you an out. But if you want to take it, we can make it on your own terms.
Right. Just, you know, some light breakfast chatter.
Love the burnt breakfast.
So as we've discussed, Aelin is really a mastermind in this book. And then we also are introduced to Lorcan. Everybody teams up to kind of destroy the tower. And then she also has her whole plan to destroy Erebin. What did you think of, like, all of these various plots? And what was your favorite one?
So I end up loving Lorcan because he came over there to like not deal with this shit and ends up like one of the crew and is like this begrudging, dark, sullen man just kind of being dragged along by the chaos that is this group of friends. And I don't know. I kind of love his little grumpy ass.
I will say my favorite mastermind plan of Aelin is the setup and assassination of Aerobin. Mainly my favorite scene in the book, like my favorite two scenes, is when she's standing out on the balcony and Rowan comes to see her and Adian, or I think it was Rowan who comes to see her. And she's just standing on the balcony in the rain with her dress. And it's because she wants to stay visible to Aerobin's spies. And then she has Lysandra kill Aerobin. And then she comes to the keep and she had been, because all this time she goes on these random heists to this bank and we have no idea why she's going on these heists. And it all comes down to she changed the will to take all of the keep in the Assassin's Guild for herself. And you find this out because she transforms back into Selena and it's all in Rowan's point of view. And he's just like, oh my God, she's a different person. What is she doing? What is she playing? And he hates it because he can tell like, this isn't really her. This is how she survived. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was so genius of her. And I was like, oh my God, that's why she was going to the bank. Oh my God, that's how she's going to fund her war against Darlin. It was so cool.
Yeah. And then she chops his head off his already dead body. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah. The scene in the bank. Oh, you go, Kaylin.
Well, I was just going to say, if we're talking favorite scenes, while that is a highlight, mine is actually the battle between her and Manon on the like floating island thing.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I think I took a picture of it because I liked the paragraph so much. That is also my favorite scene. Specifically the part where she's talking about the bond she feels between them and she feels this sort of like connection of fate running between them and like knows that Manon is supposed to stay alive. And so I took a picture of a paragraph and I'm going to read it for you guys. Aelin had felt it before, a thread in the world, a current running between her and someone else. She felt it one night, years ago, and had given a young healer the money to get the hell out of this continent. She'd felt the tug and decided to tug back. Here it was again, that tug, toward Manon, whose arms buckled as she collapsed to the stone. Her enemy, her new enemy, who would have killed her and Rowan if given the chance. A monster incarnate. But perhaps the monsters needed to look out for each other every now and then. I was just like, oh.
So good, and you don't even yet understand how good that part you read is.
Casey, well, you don't even understand.
As soon as I read it, I was like, and obviously this healer, whoever it is going to come back at some point because we haven't met whoever it is yet.
So good. That's a good paragraph.
That's a really good paragraph. The fact that you flagged that specific one, having not read the rest of the books, was crazy to me.
Yeah that now as post-read, I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it all connects.
I thought it
like,
was
yes, you're right, very obvious Easter egg, but like I can't wait for you to find out.
I know, because I just thought it was such a beautiful way to put it, because I think that's something that you can actually relate to, like when you meet someone and you just know that you are like gonna get along with them, you can just like feel that like you're gonna be their friend.
It's so rare to just meet someone and be like, yeah, we were supposed to meet,
right? And so it was so beautiful, especially for it to happen between enemies. I love the kind of
while they're kicking each other's ass and keeping them away from helping them and stuff.
Yeah, I love the kind of like inversion of the typical trope, and obviously it's like an obvious nod to someone I'll meet later. But my favorite plan was actually one that like didn't end up totally working out, but her plan with Lorcan and how she wanted him to exterminate the word hounds with him and like kind of just did that on her own as like a way to clear the way to the tower. I thought that was so smart. Obviously Lorcan is like a mastermind in his own sense, so it didn't end up going that way, but I still thought her idea was really smart.
And it's not like it ruined the plot. It just, and it ended up biting him in the ass quite literally. So
yeah,
it all ended up working out in the end, but it was very fun. Yeah. That was very fun. Cause then Lorcan comes to her, is like, yeah, seven of them came on my ass, like kind of thing. And she's like, oh, sweetie. So sorry.
Poor baby. Yeah. And I love him. I love him.
Just his interaction with everybody. I'm like, that is so funny.
He's grumpy.
He's grumpy and the rest of the book is sunshine.
I know. I will say I did not like him as much. Like where I finished the book, I'm still very suspicious of him, but I also can kind of appreciate him because Catherine is like struggling to contain herself.
I just love a shadow daddy.
Just you wait.
Anyway, I like him because he's kind of a chaos agent. But he gives me kind of the same feeling as Manon, where you can tell that he's like a chaos agent for good, even if it's not like always for good. It's like
it ends up being.
Yeah. Right. You can tell he's complicated.
He has morals and he's very torn.
He has a code, even if you don't always like the code.
Right.
Yes. He's a complicated boy.
Complicated. Anytime you give me like the grumpy dark broody man, I want to see where this story goes.
I didn't think I had a thing for like aggressive broody warriors, and then my two favorite men in this SJM universe are Cassian and Rowan, and I was like,
you have a type.
Yeah, dark broody warriors who are soft on the inside
and who are not hunt. Okay.
Hunt is just not the right mixture of traits. Like, ugh. He's just because he's not trustworthy. Like, Cassian and Rowan are trustworthy.
Much more so, yes.
Okay. So we already talked about this. Well, Casey, you talked about this, about the fight between Manon and Aelin. And since we already kind of talked about that, I'm going to do the other part of this question, which is, This is when Lysandra gets captured and Aelin and the gang go and rescue her. And we get a scene between Manon and Dorian. So what did you think about that interaction? And what did you think about like the worlds colliding between Aelin's world and Manon's world?
Did I picture the love at first sight vibe coming from the demon possessed prince and the witch queen? Like, witch princess, whatever. I'm like, no, but I think I like it. I like that they're intrigued by each other. And, like, it's very blatant where you think it's going to go. So, I don't know. That moment was weird and weird timing.
Because
you're so excited about everybody crossing paths. But they're like, oh, I didn't see that one coming. You were so distracted by the other things happening that you're like, wait, what?
So that was a surprise. I wanted to fucking murder Kale in this scene. Because he ran back and almost got them all killed. I was like, dude, what the fuck?
Well, and now he decides to kill his best friend.
Right. I was like, yeah, he's just so frustrating. But I like how everything crosses. I don't know if this will be an unpopular opinion or not, but I also sensed the tension that was built between Manon and Dorian. And I personally don't like it. I don't ship it. Like, I just don't, like, really get their characters together. And maybe I'll change my mind on that. But it feels like a really odd match to me. And I actually really wanted Manon and Lorcan to get together. Which maybe I don't know them enough yet. But they're just both so...
No. Also, you still haven't met all the characters.
That's true.
They keep coming.
Anyway, I don't technically know where this is going, but I can kind of guess where it's going. And I'm not on board with the Dorian Manon thing.
I will say something the SJM tends to do that is not my favorite is everybody needs a significant other to pair up with at some point in the book. Like, she does it in ACOTAR, and I'm like, not everybody needs somebody.
Yeah.
It's like, So this whole, it does feel very forced, like their weird connection. And all he can think of is her name. It's like, okay, come on.
Really? Right. I like less focused on that. Cause like, yeah, I get what you guys are saying. I'm more focused on the fact that like, I was like, what is truly Manon? Because we don't totally know what her parentage is or her lineage. And the fact that like the Volg in Dorian was scared of her and it was like receding with being close to her and her talking to him, she got the first real reactions of him in months. So that's what I was more interested in after this scene, less so about like, I obviously knew there was sexual tension. There was tension there. And Dorian's a fuckboy. So like, he's going to have fuckboy tendencies. But I was more interested of like, what is Manon? Why does she have this power to push away the Volg prince?
I mean, my thought was just she scares the shit out of me. So she'd probably scare the shit out of a demon too.
So she mentions in another scene that she realizes. So one of the reasons that she realizes that she thinks the Volg are not a good thing for the witches to welcome, like forced pregnancies and rape and like all of that weird.
How dark is that random part?
I was like, oh my God, this is YA. But all of that stuff aside, one of the reasons that she realizes that the Volg are probably not a good thing for the witches to fuck around with is that they revere golden eyes. And they wanted all their witches to have golden eyes and to have as like much gold in their eyes as possible. And then when the Volg prince comes to attack the 13, Manon realizes that everyone was impacted but her, and the people who were impacted the worst did not have any gold in their eyes. So there's something in their lineage or something connected to the gold eyes that allows her to resist and to be antagonistic to the Volg. And the Volg says something about like her looking like they're kings. Like there was some weird like reference to like Manon being like their gods or their kings or something. So there's something in Manon's lineage that fucks with them. Honestly, I know you read it a while ago. I'm not sure if that was kind of a small part, but
I know what you're talking about. I just don't know where this book ended and the next one started, because I know Manon's lineage, obviously. So I'm trying not to go into any.
I honestly think I've completely forgotten this part of the book, and now I'm gonna have to Google it.
Anyway, yes, I was just very curious about, is she truly all this one type of witch?
I don't know. I mean, the witches are so defensive of their, like, whoever is the father of their children, because they're like a complete matriarchal female society. Oh, Caitlin looked it up and is nodding.
I looked it up.
Yeah. Like, now you know what I'm talking about, Caitlin.
Yeah. Yeah. I that is a whole nother subplot I forgot about.
I thought what I thought was really interesting is that the witches, obviously, whatever it is and however they were doing it, wanted to basically breed in Volg resistance to their DNA, which obviously means at some point they realized that they should not have fucked with those creatures.
No, no one should have. But here we are. The whole reason for the entire series.
Yeah. Also, oh my gosh, okay, I just wanted to mention this here because we're talking a lot about the Volg. It is so trippy to read this after reading Crescent City.
Right? Oh, wait, right? No.
I am like...
I thought you were going to say after reading Fourth Wing.
No.
I saw this City. TikTok. Yeah, I get where you're going now. I saw this TikTok. It was like, like demons with like these... this like black veins and riders, wyverns. I was like, oh shit. You and Rebecca Yarros.
Yeah. But no, I'm not going to spoil it because this isn't a Crescent City spoiler episode.
Yes, that is an extremely popular fan theory.
Yeah. And it really made me think about, you know, and their chamber of the crowns of all the worlds they've conquered. I was like,
I don't think you're going where I'm going, but you're on the right track.
Yeah. There are little Easter eggs sprinkled throughout all of SJM's books, and they all connect into Crescent City.
Yeah. Some freaking how. I love, okay, so you're far enough along now. You're attached enough to Aelin. People are like seeing signs that as SJM is converging series, while Throne of Glass is said to be complete, like everything points back to Throne of Glass from the other two. Mm-hmm. And people, there was one that was like, you know, the like, leave Brittany alone. There was one that was like, leave Aelin alone.
That is, yeah, so funny.
Because, yeah, there's some fan theories about looking at all of the Easter eggs for Crescent City 3. That
the more TikToks I watch, the more I'm like, oh no.
They're concerned about Aelin's safety and well-being.
Her finality at the end of the series is in question now.
No. Anyway. I don't even know what I'm saying, but
no, maybe I'll cut all this out. I don't know. But
I mean, it's not spoiling, but
no.
Yeah.
It's just real deep in the TikTok girly.
Yes.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Basically, SJM, we need Crescent City 3 so we can squash this.
It's like 27 days from now, from the time we're recording.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, catch me on February when I'm not doing anything but reading that book. Okay.
Moving on. Next scheme. So this did shock me when Aerobin tried to enslave Aelin with the word ring. And
yeah. What?
Oh my God. My jaw actually dropped at this part. I did not see it coming. And I also did not see it coming that they switched out the word rings. I knew that they would have replaced the amulet with something else. Like, I knew Rowan would never trade that. But the stuff with the ring and Aerobin, I was really surprised by. And I was very proud of her schemes. But what did you guys think of Aerobin? He was a really infamous character and had a really big part in Aelin's childhood. And then how about his death? Obviously the will part was epic, but.
Yes, I thought he was a very interesting character. Like, obviously he's not super gray, but he tries to be because he's trying to explain his actions and get Aelin back on his side, even if it means enslaving her with a ring. And you can tell he's infatuated with Aelin and infatuated with power because he knew from the get-go that Aelin was the heir to the Terrasen throne. So he knew if he had her, he could control the continent someday. And I thought that was super fascinating because I think SJM does a good job where it's like, he's not a morally great character. He's a very like evil character, but having like this very narcissistic, power hungry man try to explain his actions and then her thinking 12 steps ahead is just chef's kiss.
It's almost like she learned to be a manipulator from him. Weird.
Yeah.
He's a slime ball and I hate him. And read Assassin's Blade. I hate him.
Oh, right. I haven't even read Assassin's Blade, but.
That's a question I was going to throw in at the end for Catherine, but I might just throw it in now because I feel like it's the time.
Yeah.
I do not remember when I read it. When did you read it? Because my opinion is it either has to be before this book or the next one.
So I read it after every of the
books. Oh my God.
I know, which was very interesting.
The stakes are so much higher when you know what's in that one.
Yeah. I think it's judging by like a timeline of reading, I would say it's probably better to read it after Queen of Shadows.
I could see arguments both ways.
Yeah.
I think Aerobin's death is very satisfying if you read it before.
Fair enough.
However, there's a completely different plot line that comes up in the next one that you really need to read it for.
Yeah.
So Casey, that should probably be your next one.
I'm like, okay, good to know.
Anyway, that is a popular argument among SJM fans is when to read that one. It's like, what order do you watch Star Wars in? And that's the reason I never watched Star Wars, because no one can agree on it. So
yeah, I think I saw a lot of people say like after Heir of Fire.
Yeah. It either needs to be after Heir of Fire or after Queen of Shadows, I think. To get the full impact.
I wish I had read it after Queen of Shadows.
There you go, Casey.
Right in time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the infamous plot with the word dogs or whatever they're called, word hounds, there we go. And then the plan to like get Lorcan to kill them backfires because he realizes Adian is Gabriel's son. Then Lysandra shapeshifts. So fucking much.
That's also why I love Lorcan. All this shit just keeps happening to him and he's like, why? I just love the surprises keep coming for him and he just remains broody, bad, grumpy man.
Sorry to interrupt, Casey. I just think it's so funny that Lorcan actually predicted Aelin's plans, that she was using him to get rid of the weird hounds, and so he changed it up on her and made sure that they didn't die so that like her plans would not work. But then he smells Adian and is like, shit, that's Gravriel's son. Shit.
Yeah.
And then helps out. And then Lysandra, because they've destroyed the tower, Lysandra comes in with a giant snow leopardess form. I'm forgetting the words for him, but snow was in the first part of it.
Yeah.
And he's just like, what the fuck is that? Like, he's so scared of that. He's just like, you have a shapeshifter friend? Who are you people?
Which is strange because they're all shapeshifters technically, but like, okay.
I mean, Lysandra can do it into whatever she wants.
Right. It's just, it's funny because every time he thinks he's like going to get out of this and get rid of this gang of people, he gets drawn in further.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They sink their little hooks into him. I do love that he's this like immortal guy who's like legendary. He's seen all he can see. He's like the best of the best. And then he gets sucked into their like little schemes. And he's just kind of like, what are these children doing?
Yes. And it's Buddy Rowan's like being one of the children.
Yeah.
Well, it's Buddy Rowan as being more like the silent kid in the corner kind of thing, watching this.
He's
all
the chaperone.
He's the chaperone. Because he's like totally instigating and allowing it to happen, but not participating in the childish antics.
Right.
So mm-hmm. It's very funny because then Lorcan's trying to find common ground with Rowan and Rowan's just like, I don't know what you mean.
Right.
Okay. So then Aelin finds out that the king has been a puppet, or at least says he has been a puppet. It's a little ambiguous as to whether or not he's telling the truth. And Irwin was released and he's been released. So like that ship has sailed. And Duke Parrington is allegedly actually the mastermind of this whole thing.
Which I did not totally see coming.
No, I did not see it coming.
Definitely thought King was the big bad. And I was like, oh, this dude's already been released and it's the king. And then I was like, oh.
Yeah, I knew Erwin or whatever definitely had been released because like they kept mentioning like in the crypt and stuff like that. I was like, oh yeah, that dude's definitely gone.
He's
out there in the world. I knew Duke Parrington from the first book. They even mentioned having more darkness around him, but I didn't connect the dots. I just thought he was a baddie bad, but not the big bad.
Well, and he seemed much more independent. Which I guess now we know why, but like less under control, but that's because he was the one controlling things. So now we know.
Yeah, I do. I'm kind of skeptical that the king was just a totally innocent bystander in all this. I feel like,
which is a very bizarre attempt at a redemption arc for him.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like he probably got played by Duke Parrington and like maybe lost control of like what was happening. But I am highly skeptical that he was just like innocent. And I'm highly skeptical that he suppressed magic for the sole good purpose of like protecting them. Like, I'm just like, I just don't personally believe any of that.
I The part I could believe is he went to Tarrison not only because he knew Aelin might have the power to burn out the demon inside of him, but I also think he was there to invade. Like, I think there was a double meaning there. But I do think that that point, it was like a self-centered, like, oh my God, she can kill me. She can finally defeat the demon. Mm-hmm. The part that I like feel kind of bad about was we never knew his name this whole series. He was just the king. And then we find out that he only ever remembered his name once, and that was to name his baby boy Dorian.
That's what, do I think he was a good guy? No. But I think he did a lot of things selfishly to protect his son. So take it or leave it.
Yeah. Aelin has a line in this book where she says, like, and I think it's something Nehemia had said that she calls back to from the first book, actually. But it's like, evil, like, always make sure you have just enough doubt or something like that. Along that sentiment of being like villains are always going to try to save themselves, and you're never going to be exactly sure at what points they were doing good versus being evil. And that's what sucks about like being on the side of good, is like then you just have to be saddled with that guilt and that doubt, and you'll never really know.
That was deep. Thank you, Casey.
It's in the book.
You could tell me something random was in the book and I'd believe you at this point, because there's so many things that happen.
I read it like by far the most recently, like by far. And so I, you know, I am just able to educate you guys now on all these tiny little fine details.
And you'll forget them in 2 years like I have and be like, what?
I'll listen to this podcast in preparation.
Now it's all just one long movie in my head and I'm missing a lot of.
Yeah, exactly.
Crescent City 4.
I'll re-listen to this podcast to freshen up for, you know, Throne of Glass 10 after we've dug Selena and Aelin and all that shit back up. And I'll be
that
like,
that is true. If you're listening and you need your Crescent City prep, just go back to all of our ACOTAR and Crescent City things instead of doing what all the crazy people are reading and reading every SJM book before the book comes out.
Jesus. Amen. Yeah. It's a lot shorter that way.
Yeah. You're welcome. Yeah.
Yep.
But okay, we're not going to have all the episodes out beforehand.
Well, we'll have the ones that really matter most for Crescent City.
Yeah. So I can't believe I forgot, because this is another one of my favorite characters, is Elide.
I'm calling her Elide.
I've been calling her Elide.
Who knows? As usual.
Catherine,
I'm looking it up. I can't. Elide.
Okay.
Well, that's stupid.
Locarn.
What?
Yeah, it's an R and not an H kind of thing. It's like one of those Gaelic words.
Locarn, not Lorcan.
Locarn. No, her last name is, it's spelled L-O-C-H-A-N.
Oh, I was calling her Locken.
Yeah, no, it's Locarn.
I thought you were telling me Lorcan was Locarn. I was like, okay, I thought I had
Elide. Elide.
Okay.
I don't like that, but okay.
Yeah, Elodie is very poetic, but I loved Elide. I thought she was a great addition because she was someone who was really strong and really smart in like a very understated and calculated way. And I thought it was so interesting and cool to watch her play the victim and blend and try to be invisible as her like offensive technique and her like defensive protection. So
she's like an unlikely friend for Manon, and you're like, what?
Yeah. And she really gets to be part of Manon's character arc as Manon like basically realizes that like the witches have gone too far and have basically abandoned their own code, which is basically just to protect each other. And so, anyway, she's a new character in the book. Through her, we kind of get an update on Caltaine, which also, oh my God, Caltaine got an amazing character.
Plot twist. Right?
Super plot twist. I didn't
redemption know. Arc? What?
Yes.
Is she dead? Question mark.
I think she's dead, she's but you dead. Guys would know better than me.
Yeah.
Then we figure out, so Kaltan's whole arc, she takes back control. We find out she managed to kill the demon that was inside of her. So badass bitch. And her terrible male overlords who were basically using her as a sex slave had put the word key inside of her. And she takes it out. And I love the moment. This is probably my second favorite scene is when she says, give this to Selena. I was like, yes, bitch. And then she explodes herself because she was put through so much horrific trauma.
And the whole castle and all the witches that were forced to bear these pregnancies and
mm-hmm.
saved so many people.
Yeah. And it was wonderful and cleansing.
And she's a martyr. And you're like, wait, I hated her. But now what do I feel?
And that is what I love about SJM is I feel like she will like take that trope of like women hating women and then just twist it. Like she'll start with it and then she'll make you regret it. Like every woman has her own arc.
And it's like all because Selena gave her a cloak.
Yeah.
So what is what Catherine has written down on her Google Doc? What did you guys, I've kind of already talked about Allied, but what did you guys think of her?
I love her.
Very curious to see where her character goes at this point.
Yeah, after reading this book, because we get like bits and pieces of her, and then like Manon declares her as part of the witches, like, what do you bleed, red or blue? And she mm-hmm. says blue. So she's kind of declared herself, but also through this, Allied has been wanting to meet with Aelin. That's been her goal. She was like, she is the queen of Terrasen, and if she is alive, I am her servant, kind of thing. Like, I am here.
She grew up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I also love, and this is something I think Rebecca Yarros does really well, is having a character with a disability, a physical disability.
Yes.
I love that she's not weak. She's not described as weak. She's described as in pain, and it's mm-hmm. because she was abused and her foot broken and not set properly, but she overcomes this and is also like really badass about it. Mm-hmm. And uses people's perceptions of her to her advantage and making
her uncle's a piece of shit.
Yeah, like making them think that she's like this weakling who doesn't know anything, but she knows everything and she's extremely strong.
Yes.
Speaking of disabilities, Kale paralyzed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He deserved it.
Loki, look. I don't believe in wishing disabilities on people, but I think his time for some true hardship had come due. and honestly, I think it will be good for his character to get to have like his own journey away from Dorian and Aelin and just get to be a big boy and stand on his own 2 feet, or hopefully.
And boy, oh boy, does
really
he get his own
like Tower
journey.
Of Dawn.
Yeah, I hope you like that one book that's dedicated to him.
I really do not want to read from his perspective. I am absolutely dreading Tower of
then
Dawn.
You probably need to do the tandem read.
Yeah.
I honestly don't even know what that means, but...
So Empire Storms and Tower of Dawn happened the exact same time.
They're simultaneous.
So... there's this idea of the tandem read where people have like you read this many chapters of Empire Storms and then you read this many chapters of Tower of Dawn and then you flip back.
Someone has mapped out what order they should be read in.
Oh, okay. I have heard of this. The only reason I would do a tandem read, I would normally be against it. The reason I would do it is because if I have to read a whole book of Kale, I'm not sure I'll finish it.
And that's why people do it.
Yep.
There are other characters within that book that are pretty epic, but it's a lot of Kale.
There's parts of that book that are amazing, and I think it is an amazing plot development book because you find out so much in that book, but God almighty, is it long, and the first two, half of it, basically, I was like, Kale, I want to throw you off a fucking roof.
I do have a friend who did the tandem read, and she enjoyed it. I didn't do the tandem read. I was fine.
I was fine as well, but...
up to you. Anyway, I thought that was an interesting little thing at the end. where the king's like himself again. And he's like, oh, and he's alive. And Dorian's like, oh shit, my friend.
Yeah. It was crazy. It was a great ending. I love it when they arrive at Tarrasen and Aelin's like, I can't believe I didn't recognize it before. Snow and pine. It smells like Rowan. And I was just like, aw.
Rowan smells like home.
Yeah, it was such a cute little tiny detail. And I'm excited for the next book.
This is like, you like this ending because you're like, all right, homegirl has dealt with all the people standing in the way of her throne. And now it's time to conquer the world. Like, we're done with this child play and we're ready to like take on the real bad guys.
She is Daenerys Targaryen and she will reclaim her throne.
Okay. Amen. Well,
they don't have the same ending, but
well, one would hope not.
Thank God. Yes, time to take back Tarrasen with her new found family, because we love found family.
We do love found family. We love the gang with all their grumpy, weird little additions.
Every one of them.
All right. Well, I think that's it. Do you guys have a book to recommend?
Assassin's Blade.
Yeah.
No, I don't have a book to recommend. We recommended so many SJM books. Go see other book recommendations that you have. Either.
I'm like, okay, it's a series. The same books I recommended for the other books I recommend for this one.
True. I feel like that's a fair cop out.
Yeah.
You.
We got more of them coming too. Like, they're gonna just read the next book.
Go to our website and look at our book recommendations tab and look for any SJM book, and then those are our recommendations.
And with that, that's a good time to plug busygirlspod.com. Go see what we recommend for all of this. And you can find all of our past episodes if you want to go back and listen to any of the other SJM things. We're at busygirlspod pretty much everywhere you can find us.
Please rate and review the podcast 5 stars. And thanks for listening. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.